Hello, Brooklyn, how you doing? Where you going? We cannot come to. And if I can, I'm gonna be your man. You can be my lady and have my baby and drive my car. You got me crazy. So crazy. I'm never gonna be going. You going? Just take me.
I love that spin. Back from spiritual sabbatical and returning alongside the much maligned Kyrie Irving. This is the Russell and Fro podcast with Russell here and Fro there. I am Brett, the man bun Garofalo, accompanied by everybody's favorite stretch big man, Carl, the talent Jackson, and great googly moogly. Are we excited to be back to attempt to unravel this absolute shit show of a Brooklyn Nets season? But as always, before we get to the crux of this podcast, we start off with a more personal touch, the human element, if you will. Carl, what a long, strange trip it's been, and the people demand to know. How you doing, my friend?
Doom, 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 doom. What if you only had one shot, but you got no shots? Do not miss your shot to blow. The opportunity comes once in a lifetime. Brett, I'm doing all right, man. How are you? My knee works, which is unfortunately, can we just take a moment to pour one out for the medial collateral ligament of one Kevin Wayne, I think is his middle name, Durant?
Listen, you know you're a basketball fan when you live in Austin, Texas, and every time you buy tickets to the ACL Music Festival, you cringe when you hear the word ACL. That's all I have to say. It's MCL in this case, but man, that's not the best news during what's already been a fairly rough season. Also, I want to compliment your track at the beginning of this. It sounded like one of the diss tracks folks have been sending Russell Westbrook, so not bad.
Lakers don't have any defenders. I feel like it would have been more slight. Well, it would have been equally. I think. Do you think doing the Eminem reference, or if I had gone with the Hamilton, won't give away my shot, would have been more topical at this point? Because I feel like Hamilton's like kind of uncool now, and maybe Eminem is like on the backswing because it's like 20 years ago. I don't know. Doesn't really matter, Brett. I'm excited to talk. I'm excited to roster bait with you. Should be a good time. Talk a little bit trades. Talk trade candidates and what's been quite a disjointed season and is only going to get more disjointed from here. With Kevin Durant, like the minutes leader on the Nets, obviously the best player, sort of heartbeat of the team, sitting out for the next few weeks, which coincidentally are road heavy and would have been our chance to see the big three play together. Which again, we will not get.
This is going to sound crazy, but truthfully, I'm glad that the Nets cheat code of let's just throw Kevin Durant in there for 48 minutes to mask and solve all of our issues on a short-term basis is gone for a little bit. I know it's been rough. I know that we've had other things going on with COVID and Kyrie and injuries, but I do think that there could be some good that comes out of other players having to establish themselves, specifically with a little bit of time before the trade deadline to see if there's any life in some of these folks and we might be giving away a gem or somebody that could actually help us. And hopefully some of these guys will establish bigger roles in some of these more important moments and prepare for the postseason because there's inevitably going to be injuries in the postseason too.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good point. I think I'd feel better about I agree with you philosophically about getting rid of the cheat code. It would make me feel a little bit more comforted if they were replacing him with like anybody that could hit a 3-point jump shot. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think LaMarcus Aldridge was just upgraded to probable after missing like 8 games with God knows what. I think we can only hope that Kevin Durant's 4 to 6 week timetable as reported by Woj is, you know, a little bit more of a literal 4 to 6 weeks, not like Joe Harris's, which is on its 8th week, I think, rounding into its 8th week without a declared setback. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about this roster and I think get into some of our observations of this team. Obviously, we haven't potted in a while since I think before the playoffs last year. I felt like whenever we start these things off, we generally, whatever the first topic on the list is, we kind of park there and take up way too much time. So in order to combat that, I thought, let's start by talking about what the Nets trade assets are. And that'll take about 15 seconds because there aren't any. And then we could talk a little bit about the, you know, our observations and what the needs are. And then we can get into kind of what guys we think might make sense to target and might be gettable. Does that sound like a plan?
That sounds like a great plan. And my only goal is to find a way to make us talk about this for 45 minutes. So let's go.
Cool. So, really, I don't think these count as assets, but the Nets do have three trade exceptions. They've got an $11 million, slightly under $11.5 million trade exception from the Spencer Dinwiddie sign and trade. They've got a $6.267 million trade exception from the DeAndre Jordan salary dump, and then a $3.6 million trade exception from the Sekou Doumbouya salary dump as well. Those are your slots that you can fit guys into. As you and I were talking about before this thing started, generally when you trade, the way that the barter system works, for those of you who are, you know, into the whole capitalism thing, or not, preferred some of its earlier stuff. You know, generally you got to give something to get something, regardless of it, if you have the trade exception. So that's where the assets come in, and that's where things get a little bit dicey for the Nets. They don't really have a draft pick of their own that they can trade until 2028, is it? Yeah, I believe the 2028 first rounder would be the next one that they could trade. They've got a 2025 second from Miami and their own 2026 second rounder that are both on the table. Also a 2028 second rounder. All of those could be traded. So hot items right there. And then in addition, if you want to look at players, the guys, there have been really, I think, three guys on this roster whose names have come up in trade talks. And then I'll throw a fourth in there as well. The first is Nick Claxton, who is making $1.7 million. He is due an extension after this year. Second round pick, a high second rounder. Obviously, he's flashed some great potential. To me, like his name has come up the most, both in terms of like reported articles. I think Ian Begley had a report on that. It's also been thrown around in sort of insider speculation from like Zach Lowe and other folks like that. I mean, the Nets haven't refuted that. In fact, there was an article where they talked about both Claxton and Harris kind of being available, and the Nets sort of pointedly came out and refuted the Harris part of it, but not the Claxton part. To me, I think Claxton's name being out there is a kind of the equivalent of like putting the open for business shingle on the outside of the store. I think it's basically saying like, you know, this is somebody you might be interested in. If you're making calls around the trade deadline, you should include us. You should call us. It's more like an inbound marketing effort than anything else, in my view. Joe Harris, as I mentioned, also been mentioned, although the Nets did swiftly deny it. He is due $17.3 million this year. He's got 3 years left on his deal. That deal goes up each year, gets to 19 by the third year. I think that, you know, the sense I get from what I've heard around the Nets is, you know, obviously he's not untouchable. If a team were really interested, the Nets would move him for the right deal, but it's really going to have to be the right deal. And I think you see kind of the swift denial of Harris being available. I think that's sort of like just driving up his price a little bit, right? And saying like, you know, give us a call. We're not going to hang up the phone on you on that one, but we're really waiting for the right number. And then the last is Javon Carter, who I think the Nets would give for a bag of peanuts right now, pretty much. I think that's the roster spot that would be on the chopping block if they were to like find a buyout guy potentially. So those are the three guys whose names I have heard in trade talks. I haven't really heard the name Cam Thomas, but I think he would be the next logical one on the list. Obviously having a great rookie campaign, due his rookie scale salary, which is, like around $2 million. I would guess his value, like, I mean, for a team that has no first round picks to deal, I would think his value is probably slightly higher than a first round pick, certainly higher than like what a Nets first round pick would be right now. So really, I would say those four. I mean, De'Ron Sharp also probably in that mix, who's shown some flashes as well, although I think Cam would be kind of the prize possession there. Does that sound like a fair rundown of the Nets assets, Brett?
I think so. When I was staring at a roster, trying to find some way to squeeze more salary outside of Joe Harris into what we have to offer, the only other name that kept popping up was Blake Griffin because he's on such a favorable contract. But I just couldn't think of a team that would really get value out of Blake because his value is the exact role that he's playing for the Nets, where he's a fringe bench player that can come in, make some hustle plays. You don't necessarily need to rely on his jump shot. If he hits him, great. If not, then yank him out of the game. And there's not many other teams that would take him and use him in that role outside of teams that we probably wouldn't want to trade for. But that being said, I could see him maybe included in a deal based on how he's fallen out of the lineup.
Yeah, I guess the only other guy that I would also just note, and I don't think I'll say throw in there, is Bruce Brown. $4.7 million on the qualifying offer, but he effectively has a no trade clause because I believe that he would waive his bird rights if he did get traded. So not as many deals would make sense for him, although he's fallen a little bit out of the rotation to a certain extent here. I do wonder if that if there could be an opportunity that would get him to okay a trade. And that could be a decent salary match number, which the Nets really just don't have very many of on this roster right now.
Yeah, I'm very much with you on that. At first, I was like, oh, right, he controls his own destiny in terms of saying, oh, yeah, I agree to a trade and I agree to be traded to this team. But if the conversation becomes, hey, your roster spot has been replaced by DeAndre Bembry, we view him as our go-to to fill your role in the regular season and the postseason barring an injury, we do have these trades on the table. You could go to this team. They're promising you more playing time. Would you be open to that? You could see a potential avenue there. The only thing I worry about is what we talked about a lot last year on the pod with Bruce Brown. His value to us is not equal to his value to other teams. And it's also very tough to see or find another team where he can play small ball center and have the defense pay no attention to him and be able to run down the lane and get those floaters. That's a pretty tough one, but that $4.7 million salary is enticing because a lot of the other folks we mentioned outside of Joe Harris don't really match the salaries of the type of caliber player the Nets would theoretically want to bring back in.
Yeah, I mean, and I almost feel like you can add the Nets to the list of rosters that he can't play small ball center on right now just because of the way that the roster is constructed with the lack of shooters. And to your point, like, I think, you know, Bembry's a little bit in that role, and they've got such a plethora of kind of fours masquerading as, you know, guys that are too slow for the four, so they're playing five between Griffin, James Johnson, Paul Millsap. Throw in, you know, LaMarcus as well, in addition to Claxton or Sharp. Like, it's just really, really difficult, I think, to find the type of spot for him that you would want. And I think that's actually a perfect segue into talking a little bit about the needs. Like, I mean, what have your takeaways of what we've seen so far from this team in this rotation, and the way Nash has managed the rotation? And what does that say to you about what they might be looking for?
I just think we're in a spot this season where it's so, so tough to assess where the Nets are at versus their goal of winning a championship. And I think that is the biggest challenge and the problem facing Steve Nash and Sean Marks at this deadline. Do they actually have a clear picture of where the holes on this team lie? And if so, how? Because I would love to know that. And how are they prioritizing those holes? And is there a potential trade that plugs those holes? There's just so much complexity around this. Like, for example, you and I were texting about this the other day. Do they, at this point, given the injuries, COVID, Kyrie Irving, prioritize getting bodies to get through the regular season so they don't have to play Kevin Durant and James Harden 40 plus minutes a game? That's important because you get through the regular season with those guys rested, not trying too hard on defense, and you avoid the play-in. It's pretty damn valuable. But then again, you might be sacrificing a little bit of ceiling in the playoffs, and you know you're going to have injuries in the playoffs. So maybe it's worth prioritizing that and rolling the dice and taking your chances that Nash and the coaching staff can just figure that out. But yeah, I think it's been a frustrating season because the Nets just haven't truly been able to get their bearings and find time to play the lineups that they believe they're going to play when the rubber hits the road. So it's really more pure speculation on our part what they're going to prioritize. I would say if I had to prioritize one thing over anything else, it's the biggest need in the NBA. It's what everybody's drafting for. It's what everybody prioritizes when they're looking at talent. Two-dimensional wings. If we can find a theoretical 3-and-D player out there, somebody that isn't one-dimensionally a shooter or one-dimensionally a defender, that would help this team a ton. And it would be somebody that could bridge the gap in lineups and be the glue that holds the defensive players to the offensive players in our lineups in the regular season and also play in the postseason. So I mean, if we can get anything, it's that. But with the assets the Nets have, it's tough to see a potential trade that brings in somebody that could play in the regular season and the postseason for the Nets. What are your thoughts on that? That was a lot of rambling.
No. I'm kind of with you there. And I think that's, I mean, to start with sort of the need that you identified, I think to me, that's the biggest challenge of this experiment that the Nets are trying to do. Forgetting all of the additional challenges that they've had just this season. Like, I think the challenge of what they're, or, you know, the potential, like, soft spot in the team that they're trying to put together, this unguardable juggernaut with Kyrie, Harden, and Durant on the floor is, you know, this is a game right now and a league right now that is dominated by these apex predator two-way wings. And I think KD almost doesn't fall in that category because he's transcends that category a little bit.
He's 7 feet tall.
Yeah. I mean, basically like he plays like one, but he's 7 feet tall. So like, I don't want to I think sometimes I discount how good he is in adjudicating this team because he doesn't really fit any mold or archetype, but like, I wouldn't put, I mean, Harden is amazing and Kyrie's amazing too. You know, those guys don't fall into the same category as like, in terms of player type, as like a LeBron or a Kawhi or a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George. Like those type, Giannis, those type of players, I think are like that. That is the most sought after skill set. That is the highest value, most scarce skill set, and the Nets are kind of trying to do this without any of them, and basically doing it by being so good offensively that it sort of won't matter. So it's an interesting, you know, filling out the rest of that lineup is an interesting task in and of itself. And then what you were referencing from our conversation like a couple weeks ago, like my sort of theory on if you go back to what the Nets did in this offseason, my theory has always been, you know, that, again, not knowing what was going to happen with Kyrie, that this team basically looked and said, listen, you know, we have what we need on offense. We're getting what we need on offense from kind of the big three, pairing them with Joe Harris. We want to upgrade kind of that bench scorer, an additional 3-point shooter role, which they did with Patty Mills. Like upgrading Landry Shamet to Patty Mills has been so huge thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And basically saying, let's round out the rest of the roster with guys that, you know, might be more redundant to each other and might not make sense in the regular season as much, but you could see them playing roles in the playoffs, right? Like the idea isn't, you know, we've got a starting four and a starting five. The idea is like, we've got basically a bullpen that we know sort of matchup by matchup, we can do whatever we need. We can play however we want to play. And so you've got Nick Claxton and to a lesser extent, James Johnson, if you want to switch everything. You've got, you know, Blake Griffin or Paul Millsap, if you need some kind of heft inside without sacrificing too much on offense because they can facilitate from the elbows and you know, be an offensive hub off the bench. You've got LaMarcus Aldridge if you want to stretch the floor offensively and get some rim protection inside on defense and some heft down there. And then you've got DeAndre Bembry and Bruce Brown if you want to, you know, spread the floor all the way around and bring one of those guys in as this sort of center, like KD as the nominal center. Those guys can set screens, roll and cut, and you know, play that kind of like guard as a big role that Bruce Brown sort of created last year. That to me was sort of always their philosophy, and I think where they've run into struggles is when you take Kyrie out of the equation and then you take Joe Harris out of the equation. Now all of a sudden you're left without those kind of regular season depth pieces that they had last year with like a Tyler Johnson or even like a TLC. And I know TLC wasn't great, but like TLC was somebody that if anybody got hurt, you could slide him in, you could play him anywhere from the four to the two. It worked out really well. You didn't have some of the kinds of challenges that you're seeing this year where basically like you've got all these guys that, might be able to play one night or the other, but like they can't play together. And you can find these pairings. Like you can find like LaMarcus Aldridge paired with Bembry and Aldridge works well with Patty Mills, but like finding a five-man unit to round things out is really, really difficult. And so, you know, I think when you look at the lineup, like what ideally what they're missing, I think is kind of what Jeff Green brought them last year. Just in terms of being somebody who can be like not a connector in the sense of like a play connector or a passer on the floor, but a connector just in terms of lineup, somebody that can make different lineup constructions work because they can exist in sort of multiple contexts. And I feel like they've got all these bigs this year that can do one thing pretty well, whether that's, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge's mid-range shooting and ability to stretch the floor, or Nick Claxton's ability to switch on defense and kind of catch lobs, or De'Ron Sharpe's rebounding, or Blake Griffin's ability to like energize the team and make hustle plays, but they don't really have anybody that can do more than one thing well. And I think that's where they're struggling, because it's like you're trying to space the floor. Like with Jeff Green, you didn't need to worry about spacing the floor the way that you do now, because even if he was playing next to DeAndre Bembry, like he could shoot threes. But now it's like you're looking at, you know, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Bembry sharing the floor, or Nick Claxton and DeAndre Bembry sharing the floor. And now you're you know, giving two roster spots away basically to guys who can't shoot. So, you know, I think a big who can stretch the floor is one of their biggest needs. I think a two-way wing obviously would be huge as well. But I think you could, if you can stretch the floor with a big, you could also lean into playing Brown and Bembry more and let them be sort of the wing defender. You just kind of need a way, you just need somebody who can do multiple things to allow you to just round the lineup out in a way that lets some of your sort of single skill guys make plays and puts them in a position to succeed.
I'm so glad that you mentioned TLC, because I cannot tell you how painful it was to skim through players on Cleaning the Glass, NBA.com, that fit the profile of what I was looking for, high volume 3-point shooters that didn't take too much off the table defensively, and see names like Timothy Luwawo Cabarro and Torian Prince pop up within that mold. Then that's in a tough spot when we're looking back and thinking, man, you know what, having TLC wouldn't be the worst thing in the world right now, given the injuries and what we need in these lineups.
Well, and to be fair, I'm not saying that getting him back would be, I think getting him back would solve the specific problem of like weathering the storm in the regular season, because I think he's the type of player that like you absolutely don't want on the floor in the playoffs under any circumstances. I think actually a better example of that was Tyler Johnson, where when Joe Harris struggled as much as he did in that Bucks series, there was still sort of no question of bringing Tyler Johnson in over him, because what would Tyler Johnson do? I mean, it would feel like you're playing yourself if all you're saying is, I just think that he's going to shoot better than this guy who's led the league in 3-point percentage this year. Whereas like if there's a little bit more of a counterpoint coming off the bench, you know, somebody who's like, well, you know, he maybe not going to shoot as well, but at least he'll be able to defend better. I think that gives you more sort of realistic playoff options than what we saw last year.
It certainly does. So you were mentioning stretch bigs. I also agree with you. And I spent a lot of time trying to find names that made sense for the Nets roster and made sense for the Nets salary wise, again, potentially an exercise in futility, but I'm not convinced that the Nets have solved their rebounding issues with the mercenary bigs that they have on the team as well. You know, as I'm looking at these stats, De'Ron Sharp and Paul Millsap are the two players that lead the team in defensive rebounding percentage. And then after that, it goes to Kevin Durant and James Harden. Like that is not, you don't want those two names in your top four when it comes to rebounding, if you want to be a good rebounding team. And De'Ron Sharp is a rookie. Can you really trust him to produce in the postseason? So no, that leaves Paul Millsap, and he hasn't really shown us much this season. So can we really rely on him in the postseason too? And if not, and if we don't think that, and if we don't think that giving De'Ron Sharp minutes down the stretch is going to allow us to rely on him in big spots in the playoffs, we need a rebounder, then we may have to prioritize bringing in somebody that can be a big body and bang around down low at the expense of bringing in a stretch big, which I agree would greatly help this team. And especially with LaMarcus Aldridge's name, it would be nice to have some redundancy at that position, because it's tough to think that, hey, this guy's going to be able to come in and survive four playoff rounds. So I don't know what you think of that, but that was the third category that I had outside of stretch big, two-way wing, and a rule change that would allow Kyrie Irving to play every game and solve our problems.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think also when I say big too, I don't necessarily mean like a center. I think it could be anything from like a true like 3-4 tweener. Like I feel like they have some 2-3 kind of tweeners, and then they have a KD, but they don't really have a 3-4 kind of tweener that could stretch the floor a little bit and could play alongside KD. My suspicion, and I mean just based on what we've seen from Sean Marks, I think they kind of view. And we could talk about this as we get into Claxton, and maybe that's the transition to talk to as well. Like I feel like they generally view center or anybody that can't shoot kind of as relatively expendable. I think, you know, and part of that could be like, I mean, yeah, like, you know, could they get Tristan Thompson on the buyout market this year? Like probably. I don't 100% know where that type of player fits, even just from like a roster spot perspective, because like you can't play them with anyone. Whereas if you could bring somebody in that could allow you to play bigger, like to me, like the rebounding doesn't necessarily have to be about like just the individual being a good rebounder. Like the Nets are just playing small such a high percentage of the time that I feel like, you know, bringing somebody in as like a three next to KD or a true four next to KD, where you could play, you know, big three, that person, you know, in like a Claxton or something like that. Like, I think that opens up a lot. I think like to go back to a trade that we talked about last year, and we'll come back to the actual deals, but like if you were like last year, we talked about like, would you do Harrison Barnes for Joe Harris? And I think I definitely would have said no. And I think this year I kind of maybe would, not because of Harris's playoff struggles. Cause I think that's overblown, but just because I think the Nets, like given that you're playing Kyrie and Harden, like Harris kind of locks you into being like really quite small. And if you're trying to use KD at the five, like you're even smaller. But if you were to run like Barnes, you know, Bembry and KD as your front court, like to me, I don't know, to me that like unlocks a little bit more and it makes you a little bit more formidable in matchups against bigger teams. So it's less necessarily like that it has to be a big that's shooting and just like getting a little bit beefier in the front court. Like I think also like if they had signed Otto Porter this offseason, or frankly, if Kyle Kuzma was available as a take back in the Spencer Dinwiddie sign and trade, like I think that's something that they should really regret for not doing. And I don't know that it was, but I think he would fit that mold as well. Just somebody that can shoot, space the floor, but be just a bigger body out there.
Kyle Kuzma, KCP. I doubt KCP was attainable, but man, would he fit in well on this team? I also think that the inclusion of Patty Mills in our lineup makes the Barnes for Harris trade a little bit more palatable.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, because if you need to inject a little bit more shooting into one of those lineups, it's not like you're going from Joe Harris to Landry Shamet and Harrison Barnes, or Chris Chioza and Harrison Barnes as your backup option for a theoretical shooter. Patty Mills is a world beater champion. We've seen what he's done, hitting 7+ threes off the bench multiple times this season. Playing a lot harder on defense than I think either of us expected, and joining the blue collar boys. So good God, has that guy been a revelation? So I do think he makes it a little bit easier for us to trade Joe, as painful as that would be to give up yet another, what we viewed as a foundational piece and somebody that we watched grow up with the Nets, which it's always a lot more fulfilling to win with those guys, but it's also more fulfilling to actually win. And if that's what it takes, then we got to do it. This is it.
Yeah. I mean, I think his inclusion too, like, again, right? Like, that's, you know, I think one thing that I will be watching for over the next few games as Kyrie gets more and more acclimated is like, can he and Patty share the four, and can you make that work defensively? And so far we saw it work pretty well against Indiana because they just blitzed them off the floor. I don't recall how much, they definitely played together against Chicago, and it seemed to work pretty well. And that was a game that they were getting sort of outsized in across the board. So, but again, like that's where, you know, if you want Patty to play up, you know, and Harris is there too, you know, I mean, you're conceding quite a lot of size across the board. So let me ask you one other question before we switch. So it has to do with, so I mean, I think you and I are pretty aligned on Harris, which is basically like, we don't want to get rid of him. I think he has a ton of value to this team, but you know, for the right type of player, I think a deal could make sense. What's your feeling on Claxton, and what's your feeling on Cam Thomas? I guess let's start with Cam Thomas. Like, if throwing Cam Thomas into a deal is going to, I guess just generally, what's your opinion on him from what you've seen so far this year, and like, how willing would you be to toss him into the right deal to pull somebody back that's maybe going to have more short-term value, but less long-term?
Yeah, that's fair. I think luckily both Claxton and Cam Thomas fall into the same category, with those them being very young players that haven't realized their potential yet. So we can, I can pull back and just talk through how I think about whether or not a contender should retain versus trade a young asset, which is, it's something that always divides a fan base, because we want to connect to those players that we drafted and we watched grow up. And that just always so fulfilling. I realize I'm repeating myself, but I just love that so much. And that's why we'll always be connected to that Kenny Atkinson team, RIP. So I think if you're looking to retain young players, they either have to be a foundational piece of a bridge the gap core, where it's okay, we've got some aging out stars, but this is somebody that will backfill those stars and be a star to take over the team, and theoretically be ready to take over the team as these guys are sunsetting their careers, and potentially even be able to prolong a career of a Kevin Durant or a Kyrie Irving or a James Harden as they morph more into role player status, much like a Vince Carter did later in his career, where he was still playing a key role on the Dallas Mavericks, hitting game winners against the Spurs in the playoffs, but he was not part of their core three or even top four players at that point. And if they're not a foundational piece of bridging the gap in the future, are they going to be a key postseason rotation player? Are they going to be somebody that you can rely on down the stretch in a key postseason game, and not just somebody that you would throw in there if there's foul trouble you weren't expecting or injuries? Anybody that doesn't fall into either of those two categories are more than expendable in my mind. And unfortunately, Cam Thomas doesn't fall into either of those categories for me. I love the guy. I love watching him play. I love how close he is with KD and Kyrie Irving. I love his confidence, but he does not have the type of talent to be a foundational bridge the gap star. And I don't see him playing a key rotational role in the postseason. So I think maybe his brand and his value trade wise won't be higher than it is right now, at least on this Nets team where he's not going to really get that much playing time. So maybe we should capitalize on where his brand is. He had an incredible summer league, had some notable moments. He just hit a game winner against the Spurs the other day. He's playing sometimes more than 20 minutes in games and sometimes scoring more than 20 points for a contending team. That has to be something that can draw back value on the market. The issue is the salary and what else we package around him. So I'm more than willing to trade him, and I'm more than willing to take the bet that this is the maximum his value will be and the most alluring his talent will be on the market. I'll pause there and let you comment on Cam before I go too deep into Clax.
So I think I'm broadly like aligned with you in general, right? Like, I think Lucas Kaplan had tweeted out the other day, like, it was a whole thread just on observations about the Nets, I think after the Bulls game. And I think his phrasing was like, I struggle to see Cam Thomas's playoff utility next to Kyrie. And I kind of agree with that. I guess the one question or the one thing that gives me pause, and I guess it's two things. One is, to your point, if we're talking about regular season depth and somebody that can come in and get you 20, 25 a night in the regular season and kind of fill that type of role, I mean, maybe he's the best option that we're going to find for that type of player. And he's already on the roster and he's only making $2 million. So that's one, I think, one consideration. And I think consideration two is, And I don't want to open the whole Kyrie can of worms. And I sort of disagree with this, and I'll give you my opinion on why later. But if you are in a situation where Kyrie's status remains the same and he's unavailable for home games going into the playoffs, I think that really changes my opinion on whether or not you need Cam Thomas. Because I do think that Cam Thomas gets playoff rotation minutes in home games in that case. Because I think he de facto becomes, you know, Patty Mills is going to start and Cam, I think, becomes like your off the bench scoring punch in those scenarios. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Cause I don't really see who else would fill that role on the team. There's not another shot creator on the roster if Kyrie Irving isn't playing home games, but
I mean, you could go get Mike James again, I guess, like, and I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, I know you're not. So the flip side of that is if we are relying on Cam Thomas to fill the Patty Mills off the bench role in home games, does that mean that we're screwed anyway? And so maybe that's the way to look at it. Like, can we win a series against the Bucks or the Sixers or insert top five contender X here if in the Nets home games, if they don't have home court advantage, we have Cam Thomas as our key guard off the bench. And I don't know.
I mean,
I don't think we could, but maybe I'm being too pessimistic.
I think if you were relying on him in all games, then yeah, I think you're right. I don't know that it's as cut and dry as that. And then I think you also have to think of like the scenario where like, you know, somebody misses a game or two, and having some sort of stopgap there. I mean, I think that's part of the inventory we've seen them taking of all the rookies. I don't think it's just like, is Kessler Edwards going to get playoff rotation minutes as much as it's like, is Kessler Edwards good enough that I could get rid of one of Bembry or Brown potentially?
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Can I get something back on the trade market for Bembry or Brown? And,
you know, cause maybe I don't trust him to be like plan A or even plan B, but like, you know, maybe I'm cool with him being plan C or D. Anyway.
Well, and do we have time to figure that? That's the other thing too. Like, do we actually have the time to figure out if we want to keep these guys around? And like, given all the changes in the lineup and the roster throughout the season, do we have enough minutes and enough time with the rotations we would play them with to figure that out too, which is the thing that really makes this difficult in my mind. So I definitely don't envy the task that Marks and crew have ahead of them in terms of figuring out who should we trade, who shouldn't we trade, and who do we want to have as a redundant lineup spot when the postseason rolls around.
I agree with that.
I think I would lean trading him, but I don't know. I'm not totally sold on it, but I think I would lean trading Cam.
Who do you think is a more valuable trade asset, Claxton or Thomas?
I have to say Claxton, and it's weird that I say this because I do really think that Cam Thomas's pedigree is pretty high. Just because he is a shot creator, he's flashy, he is friends with a lot of NBA stars, which goes a long way. If you have the respect of those stars, you tend to have a little bit more value around the league from what I've seen trade-wise. But I do think that Nick Claxton's game winner over LeBron earlier this year really helped him out, because if you want to look at last season versus this season, when talking about Claxton, his overall impact on the floor defensively and offensively was better last season. But if you think about memorable moments and things that the casual NBA fan and other players will remember and respect Nick Claxton for, the only moment in his career that I can think of is going to be that dunk over LeBron. And I think that over anything shows that he can make big plays in big moments against contending teams. And that probably skyrocketed his value over somebody like a Cam Thomas. Where, like, hey, he hit a nice little floater against the Spurs in an overtime game, but the Spurs probably ain't making the playoffs. That wasn't really a big win.
Yeah, I think it's hard. Cause I think, Thomas, like, as an archetype, like, I think he's either going to be, he's got sort of like three options, right? Like, he's either going to be like amazingly good, like all-star level. He's going to be sort of a six-man microwave scorer, or he's going to be out of the league in 5 years. Like, I don't really think there's a lot of in between there, just given sort of what his skill set is and isn't. I could be wrong. So, like, I don't know. It's an interesting bet for somebody to place, getting him as like a rookie that we've seen in the league. Now, you know, he came in as a mid to late round draft pick, and he's proven that he can score in the league. So I don't really know that he could have done much more to up his stock than he has. Claxton, the injury concerns are really the only thing that muddy the waters for me there. I think he's kind of a buy low type guy, and he's kind of somebody that I think another team might be interested in, because he's going to be relatively attainable. From the Nets perspective, I think he fills two roles on this team that, or does two sort of jobs for this team that you would have to backfill if you got rid of him. One is they absolutely need a lob threat. I think having Harden play with guys that can't dunk lobs is a travesty. Both in terms of your ability to win a championship this year and frankly to retain him going forward. So I think that's, I mean, and I'm not saying that's like an impossible thing to find. And maybe De'Ron Sharpe can be that, but I think you need to backfill that if you get rid of Nick Claxton, and then you need a big who can switch and who opens up kind of the all switch lineups. And, you know, maybe that could be James Johnson. Maybe that could be, you know, somebody that you get back in a trade. But it's interesting and unique to me that, like, I don't think there are many players, if any, in the league that would like fill both of those roles in a single shot. And that's sort of like the unique conundrum of trading Claxton, is like, you know, I think you kind of have to get two different guys back that they don't have right now. So it has to be sort of like a multi move in my view.
That's an interesting way to look at it. You know, I think that you're right that Nick Claxton is worth more to the Nets than he would be to another team. And Cam Thomas could be potentially worth more to another team than he is to the Nets with the prolific scorers that we have on this team. And this is, you know, I don't mean to overlook all the points we just made earlier, but I do kind of see it that way. And from that perspective, given that it would be very tough to backfill what Claxton brings us, you know, maybe Cam Thomas does become the person that we're throwing out there as the more tradable asset.
Should we talk about who we can get back?
Oh, God. Well, the issue is the combined salary of the two players that we've just been talking about is $3.7 million. So I'm not excited to talk about who we could potentially get back for some of these trade assets, but let's dive into it, Carl.
Do you want to go first or?
I will. I'll throw some names out there that I was looking at. I mean, so you, Carl and I were G-chatted before this, and he threw in G-chat throwback, right? So he threw out Torrey Craig's name, and I was like, unfortunately, Carl, Torrey Craig is also on the top of my list of trade targets with a $4.9 million salary. And if we're sticking on the Pacers, Justin Holliday is also out there with a $6 million salary. And it's sad to start with these two names, but these are the caliber of player that I truly think that we're able to target if we're not going to be trading somebody like a Joe Harris in a deal, because once after Joe Harris's salary, it really, really drops off unless we're looking at trading somebody like, unless we're looking at combining like a Patty Mills and a Bruce Brown at a deal, which I think would be a devastating deal for the Nets and wouldn't really be likely to happen. So these are the caliber players that we're looking at after a Torrey Craig and a Justin Holliday, like maybe a Ben McLemore, a Tony Snell, Daniel House, like these are names that I was looking at. The guys that I would really want on the team or take a flyer on would be like a Gary Harris or a Terrence Ross, you know, even a Torian Prince or a Reggie Bullock, but their salaries might be a little bit too high to make something work unless we're involving a third team. So I just threw a bunch of names out there. And Torrey Craig is probably the most attainable, but.
Brett, fuck out of here with your Torian Prince.
TP, baby. He's best friends with KD, Carl.
That's true. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with you in terms of, like, the caliber of player. You know, I was listening to the Hoop Collective, and they were talking about, like, the Blazers wanting Miles Turner and, like, you know, wondering if, you know, is there, like, an opportunity to get in there and just be, like, the third team in a deal like that and peel off, like, Holiday or Craig or somebody that might be needed to make salaries match, like if they were doing like a, you know, McCollum for Turner type swap. That was one that I had thought of, right? Larry Nance Jr. would be another guy.
Oh, man. Don't get me excited. That would be awesome if we got Larry Nance Jr.
I don't really know. I mean,
I just don't think that's possible.
I thought if, you know, if they could cook up a three teamer between, like, where the Blazers were getting CJ McCollum, obviously the Pacers are getting CJ McCollum, one of those Nets second rounders, maybe that 2028 first too. I don't know. The Blazers were grabbing Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, Nick Claxton, Justin Holiday, and the Nets took Larry Nance. I still don't 100% see why the Pacers wouldn't just keep him in that deal. My only thought would be, like, if the Blazers really wanted Nick Claxton, which I convinced myself was maybe possible because he did such a good job shutting down Dame last year. But that would give them – I also like – I mean, the idea of a Claxton-Turner front court is kind of enticing. I'm assuming that they would trade Covington and Nurkic in separate deals, you know, if they're basically deciding to blow it up with Dame's surgery. I don't know. It's sort of my biggest moonshot that I had thought of there, and there's a lot in between. I think much more likely is kind of what you're mentioning of, like, you know, there's another big deal to be had, and we just kind of swoop in and steal, like, Holiday or Turner. Garrett Temple will be another guy. I'm wondering if we could swoop in and finagle, because he would fit into the either trade exception, and be somebody that I think could get playoff minutes on this team.
Are you suggesting that Chauncey Billups is going to pull at Doc Rivers and try to trade for all the players that played well against him? I like it.
I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility. I think that, like, I think that Claxton is interesting in the sense that, like, I think he would be best suited actually being a four and not a five. And so pairing him with Turner, I just think does kind of make a ton of sense, because it would let him guard on the perimeter a little bit more. It would let him kind of be more of like a weak side rover, and, you know, like, his deficiency defensively is going to be his rim protection. You'd need him to grow as a screener a little bit, but he's got a pretty good handle. I don't think he'll ever be able to shoot, but Turner can shoot. So you could kind of invert the offense that way. And I don't think it would be quite as, like, stuck in the mud as like Indiana is. with Sabonis because I don't think you need the ball in Claxton's hands quite as much. Like, I think he can just kind of be a screen and dive guy and a lob finisher. I don't know. I could make it make sense enough for the Blazers. It does seem like they would be really like locking in on him and selling super low on Larry Nance, though.
I do feel the same way about that. I feel like we'd be extremely lucky to get Larry Nance. I was trying to go through names that haven't really been thrown out there too. Like I guess his length wouldn't really be enough, but somebody like a Tomas Satoransky that could provide that connective tissue between some of our players, not take anything off the table defensively, not be a terrible shooter out there, but also be a great passer and somebody that can defend the point of attack. That would be super interesting. And $10 million salary, that's an attainable salary.
That fits in the trade exception.
It fits. Oh, so that was, and he, you know, he also was on the Pelicans, and you know, we have some front office connections there. So I'm wondering if that maybe we can work something out. We'll see.
Yeah, that was my thought with Temple too. Like
Temple, yeah.
You know, I don't know. Kyle Anderson's another name that's been thrown around a little bit. He fits in the 11.2 trade exception. I really struggle to see what the Grizzlies would want from us. So it would have to be like maybe a multi-team deal because, you know, I think they're going to be looking to get better right now. And I don't know that we have anybody that would do that for them.
Yeah.
I tried to make Jeff Green coming back happen. I just can't think of a way to do it.
Yeah. I just don't know why they would do that too. Cause they're expecting to get, they're expecting to get Michael Porter and Jamal Murray back for the playoffs. So they're not really in sell mode unless they're getting something back that they can help them. I don't really think we have any players. Although Claxton next to Jokic is interesting, but
Claxton next to Jokic is interesting. But I guess with Porter as like the three, but with Gordon, I don't know. I don't know that it makes a ton of sense.
Anyway, like I don't even if you ask me which name that I like the most on this list, I don't even think I have an answer for you there. I do think I was intrigued by some of those under the radar names like a Tomas Satoransky or even somebody like, hey, Devonte Graham's only making $11 million a year for the next 4 years. Like maybe he's our Cam Thomas replacement if we trade Cam because he's more of a proven player and shooter and playmaker.
I do think a backup point guard would behoove this team just given how little time it seems these guys play together, but I guess we are entering into the season of Kyrie and Harden playing together, so maybe that'll become less interesting. A couple other names like Chris Boucher.
He's on my list.
I don't even know if he's better than Claxton, so I don't know if it makes a ton of sense. But like he can shoot though.
He can kind of shoot. Yeah.
I mean, he's not shooting very well. But he's not shooting particularly well. I mean, he's shooting like 24% from three this year. But he shot like 38 last year. So the idea there would be what I was saying before of like, if you could, you know, get somebody at the five who can stretch the floor a little bit, it opens things up for like Bembry or Brown. I don't love it.
I don't love it either, but if you're looking at stretch bigs, I mean, after Boucher, Kelly Olynyk,
I'll beat you and go Jackson Hayes, who's like not even playing on the Pelicans. So I think that's off the list.
Listen, we have a good track record with University of Texas stringy centers. So why not, right?
I mean, that was sort of my thought. Like, I don't really see how that would make any sense. I just thought he would be super available, but for a reason. So we talked a little bit about the Joe Harris for Harrison Barnes deal. I don't know why the Kings would necessarily do that. I guess they might. I was also trying to cook it into a three-teamer with the Cavs, because the Cavs have rumored to have interest in Joe Harris, which I think makes a ton of sense. Honestly, like I think that would be a fantastic fit for him, because I think if you think of like, you know, I think two things about Harris. Like one is the Nets have almost always used him as a three. Or like a two with sort of, I mean, like with him and Karis on the floor, like, you know, arguably sort of like a three-guard lineup at all times. So putting him in like a much bigger front court situation where he could kind of be the two next to either Garland or Sexton, if he's coming off the bench with like a Coro and then the two bigs, like I think would be great. And then any defensive deficiencies that you see on his side, like I think really get covered up by having like an actual back line that can clean up his mess a little bit. So I think he'd be super valuable for them. I think it totally makes sense that they're looking at him. I don't know why the Kings would do it aside from being like a historically inept franchise, but if they sent like Rubio's expiring Javon Carter and like a couple Cavs first rounders for Barnes, like, and then the Cavs get Harris, like maybe that could work. I still don't love that deal. I don't feel great about it. Like I really would like Harris back. But
I'm just interested to see how many problems Joe Harris solves that we're currently facing if he does come back fully healthy, because a little bit more floor spacing, another off the dribble creator, and he's not really an off the dribble creator, but he can drive, right? He's not JJ Redick out there, and somebody that doesn't take anything off the table defensively, like that helps us so much right now.
Well, and again, like I think it allows you to play. It opens up space to play some of the pieces that they have. I can't get over just this thought that like this entire bench was essentially created to have like these individual guys come get placed into a context of four other players that are spacing the floor and driving the offense and, you know, being asked to do sort of one thing and one thing well. And now you have two of those guys on the floor at a given time, or three, you know, like three of those guys on the floor at a given time. And it just completely collapses in on itself. So, yeah.
Yeah. But the big man market is,
Derek Favors.
I have Derek Favors, Kem Birch, Thaddeus Young. I threw Doug McDermott on my list.
Oh, wow.
But his contract is not great. He does bring shooting.
I don't hate that.
I mean, the Spurs aren't really playing him that much, and they're going with the youth movement right now. They're playing Josh Primo big minutes, and most people thought he wasn't going to play for 2 years because he was so young. So it's
can we get David Nwaba back?
I mean, yeah, I would love to get Nwaba back. Don't tempt me with a good time, Carl. I've missed him ever since we let him go, and that injury was devastating because I think he would still be on the team if that hadn't happened. I think the Serge Ibaka potential buyout ship has sailed with all this news about Kawhi Leonard potentially returning. Why would they trade somebody who might be able to slot into some lineups and block some shots for them or buy them out? Although if he doesn't come back, I believe he saves the Clippers a significant amount of luxury tax, salary or tax, as Nets Twitter likes to remind you to say, not luxury tax. But that seems like a pipe dream at this point. Yeah. Right. Sample size. Well, maybe there's some credence to this, right? Like, you can't be in fight or flight mode all the time. You can't run 120 miles per hour all the time. Bruce Brown was fighting for his NBA life last year. This year, DeAndre Bembry is fighting for his NBA life. This is basically his last chance to carve out a place in the league for himself, and he's doing that, and he'll probably stick around for another 5 years based on how he's playing with the Nets. And he's solidified himself as a key piece with a contending team. That's massive, and at the very least, he'll be brought in as a veteran presence for an up-and-coming team. Be like, oh, hey, show these young guys how what it looks like to work, what it looks like to play hard day in and day out, even when it's not necessarily the most meaningful games. Yeah, I wanted to end with a couple points for optimism, because looking at some of these trade targets, it does seem bleak, especially with the way that the team's been playing recently and the KD injury. We do have 11 of our next 14 games on the road, which means more Kyrie. And to your point about him pushing the pace, I mean, we don't need other players that can run the fast break when we have Kyrie Irving in the game, because he can be a one-on-three fast break and finish through three guys and zip up and down the court. That's the dimension that he brings. So I am excited to watch him get into shape a little bit and start to fill in around some of the margins on this roster and see how some of the other players look with him. Excited about that. I'm hoping that this KD injury forces Harden to step up his workload a little bit on the offensive and defensive side, and maybe whip him into, or by whip, I mean defibrillate him into just a little bit better shape there. And there's a big difference in terms of this team's ceiling when he's playing at top five player Harden level versus all-star Harden level. So I'm hoping that happens, and I'm excited to watch that. And hey, KD gets some rest. I think that's huge. I don't think he was going to rest. I think he wanted that MVP, and I think he was going to potentially sacrifice an extra gear in the postseason, which was the thing that really gave us hope last year when we saw how he was flying around the court. And we were like, oh, wow, this is what KD at full throttle looks like. It felt like he was doing that in a lot of games this season, which made me a little bit worried about having that gear and looking a little bit better in the postseason and turning it on like a lot of the true contenders do. So those are a couple silver linings, notes of optimism moving forward with all the uncertainty and craziness around this Nets team. No, none of the deals that we just talked about get done, but I do. There will be deals. I think that they're probably as urgent about the window that we have to make these three guys happy, make them feel like we're always going to give them a shot to win a championship and always going to support them the way they want to be supported. And I'm sure that they haven't necessarily been happy with the spacing on the floor and how the team's offense doesn't flow the same way that it did last year and the situation with Kyrie. So they're probably going to push us to do something. And as we've seen with Kyrie coming back and playing 50% of the remaining games, they tend to get their way eventually, even if the front office doesn't agree. I feel that way too, and I simply feel that way because of something you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. capitalism. The league wants Kyrie Irving to be out there. He's a massive draw. He's a super talented player. His jersey is always up there in the top 10 of jerseys that are most sold. He sells tickets. He gets ratings. He gets views. The NBA wants him to play. I think they'll find a way. So much fun. I love De'Ron Sharpe. I really do think he could be like a postseason rotation guy for us. I was thinking worst case he replaces what we were hoping to get from Millsap outside of the shooting, which hasn't been there this season anyway. Right. Yeah, I really think so. And man, like I try to get too optimistic about rookies, but he fills a lot of holes for this team. And maybe that's why I'm pushing to trade Cam when I feel like his trade value is so high, because I do agree with you. Maybe he does turn into an all-star, or maybe he turns into nothing. And we don't really have the time to figure that out. So I'm like, maybe we just cut Babe now. And, you know, if he turns into an all-star on another team, that'll be really tough for Nets fans to watch. We'll always be fans of him, but at least we got back something that we know we can help us now. Right. Well, that's the key. You have to get back something, right? Yeah. Oh, man. It's going to be fun. February 10th. It's coming. You know what? I check it occasionally. Hit our DMs up. I love to hear from you. Maybe throw some questions out there, and Carl and I will, even if they're yes or no questions, we'll take about 35 minutes to answer each of them. So, you know, we'll give you our best effort. Right. Yeah. At least the most words. We know how to make one point throughout the course of a 7-paragraph essay that we were asked to turn in tomorrow. But yeah, listen, you can follow us at Russell and Fro on Twitter, like you said. You can find us at pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. I don't think there's one major medium that we're not on right now, which is great. Breaker, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I'm sure I'm missing something out there. Thanks for listening. We're happy to be back in there. They said you murdered me by the time I was 21. That shit disturbed me, but you never hurt me. Hello, Brooklyn. If we had a daughter, guess what? I'm a caller. Brooklyn Carter. When I left you for Virginia, they didn't offend you. Cause you know I only stepped out to get dinner. Hello, Brooklyn. How you doing? Where you going? Can I come soon? I'm with your buddy. Be my lady. And have my baby. Got my car.
crazy. Whatever you throw me, baby, girl, just take it. Cause I'm so taken, if you take it. I'm just saying, baby, I'm just saying.
That's our back.